Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Great Tuesday program for you. Jason Garrett had to explain himself to Jerry Jones. That plus the Super Bowl champs just lost a key piece. But we have to start with history being made in the NFL last night. I'm sure you watched it. Drew Brees, the barely six-foot signal caller in New Orleans, started the night as the NFL's third all-time leading passer and finished number one. Drew Brees breaking the record on this 62-yard touchdown pass to Tre'Quan Smith. Passed Peyton Manning for that record. He finished the night with 363 yards in the air, completing 26 of his 29 passes as the Saints rolled to a 43-19 win over Washington. After the game, a very happy and a very humbled Drew Brees.
It's hard for me to reflect too much right now just because my career's not done. There are still goals to be accomplished. There's still challenges to be met. And so I'm still very focused on that. And yet when something like this happens and I can, you know, there's so many people that are responsible for that can be a part of that, it makes me happy. You know, it makes me proud and it makes me extremely grateful. Extremely grateful for the opportunity to play this game, to have played it as long as I've been able to play it, to have wound up here in New Orleans, which you all know that story. So it's been an unbelievable journey, and I'm just so grateful.
You know, Cece, he's right. There are still goals and accomplishments and records and all that to be set. He has either gotten most of them or is pretty close to grabbing a lot of them. If you take a step back, how impressive has this journey been for Drew Brees?
And it's been one of the most impressive resumes that we'll ever see in pro sports. Because the one thing about sports, especially from a professional standpoint, it's about size and speed and power. Like when you make it to the elite level at all levels, that being hockey, baseball, that being the NBA or the NFL, and especially the NFL. Like when I walk around the Hall of Fame, when I take Nick to introduce him to some of my friends and everything, Nick is forever always amazed at just even how the legendary players from years ago.
Even the guys from the 60s.
Just how
big
they are. Big
dudes, man.
I mean, it's a big man's game. It's meant to be played by big people. And this guy has changed how people look at the game. Like there's so many more quarterbacks that will get a chance to play because of Drew Brees in what he's doing as a quarterback. Russell Wilson tweeted something last night, you know, to the effect of, you know, looking up to Drew Brees and setting that example. And he did it not like Fran Tarkenton, because Fran Tarkenton did it a different way. He did throw the ball, but he ran around an awful lot, which also changed how you could play quarterback. But that opened the door for people like Michael Vick. Drew Brees opened the door for anyone. If you can throw the ball, and you can throw the ball, they'll make a spot for you. It's like a three-point shooter in the NBA. Man, the coach gonna find a spot for you to get some minutes. And Drew Brees, what he's been able to do with height challenged, and I believe that's very, very important. And he plays the game as good as we've ever seen any quarterback play the game. And he played in an era where you can't just say, well, it was his offense. Well, they ran some type of run and shoot or they ran some type of gimmick. No, they ran the same type of offense other teams ran. Three receivers, one back, and here of recent, they've finally gotten a running game. But it's been on Drew Brees' shoulders. It's one of the great accomplishments that you will ever, ever see, and the legacy that he will leave in pro football about small guys can play this position and play at an elite level.
To stick with the size part of it, I'm not comparing it to any type of actual prejudice, but Warren Moon opened the door for a whole generation of quarterbacks.
Yes.
Guys to say, oh, the black guys can play quarterback, right? That was real prejudice. Drew Brees opened the door to NFL talent evaluators saying, oh, wow, if you're not 6'2", I can't just cross you off my list. And that's why Russell Wilson has so much appreciation for him. That's why Baker Mayfield should have so much appreciation for him, whoever the next guy is. Because, listen, Doug Flutie existed, but Doug Flutie didn't excel at the highest levels. So you see a guy be one of the very best quarterbacks in football that doesn't have those measurables, and it makes other teams think, well, if he could do it, other guys could do it. Go ahead, C.
Yeah, and, you know, Doug Flutie opened up the door for a certain type of quarterback. But Drew Brees, man, he opened it up that, like, no matter what your height is, no matter what your athleticism is, because you couldn't make an excuse for Doug Flutie not being on the field because he was a playmaker. But what it opened the door for Drew Brees, and Drew Brees for Russell, man, Baker Mayfield doesn't go to number one pick in the draft if Drew Brees and Russell Wilson aren't playing the type of football, because we don't have that example.
Exactly.
We as NFL and people being involved in the NFL, we love to be able to point out someone from previous history who looks like someone now so that we can kind of correlate what they're going to look like playing the game. What he's done with Sean Payton in New Orleans is tremendous, tremendous story. One of the greatest stories that we'll ever have in this great legacy, what we have in the NFL.
And even if he were 6'5", his career would still be one of the most unlikely ever. His last year in San Diego, he was 24 touchdowns, 15 picks, an 89 rating. They were 9-7. He suffers a major injury. And that is then what propels him to New Orleans, teaming up with Sean Payton. Dante Stallworth told a great story yesterday about how meeting up with Drew Brees in the offseason and talking about potentially going to New Orleans, where Dante Stallworth already was. And Drew Brees knew all the receivers there, knew the types of routes they liked to run, knew what system they already had in place. And Dante, who was a good player in his own right, said, "That's what made me realize what separated him from everybody else, that a team in a different conference that he hadn't even played with yet, he knew what I was doing and what my teammates were doing better than the guys who were already in the building."
You both mentioned Sean Payton. How important is it? These two have been together for 13 years. They have a Super Bowl together. How important was it for Drew Brees' confidence to also have a guy like Sean Payton say, "Hey, forget what you did. We understand the shoulder injury, all of it. We believe in you," and has built an offense for the last 13 years around him.
Jenna, you know how important it is for someone just to trust in who you are and what you can do. And Sean Payton in New Orleans, because Nick Saban told him no in Miami. The choice in Miami for Nick Saban was Dante Culpepper with a bad knee and Drew Brees coming from San Diego Chargers with a bad shoulder. And they were quoted in Miami as saying, "Never bet on a quarterback that's got a bad shoulder. Always go with the quarterback with the bad knee." And now we see what has happened. Both those careers went in opposite directions. So what Nick Saban and them, they actually did what I believe just was fate. It was meant for him to meet Sean Payton and get to New Orleans. 99% of all the players, great, is as much talent as they have. And let's not, Drew Brees is a great athlete playing quarterback. He's just not Michael Vick. But all those athletes, I'm saying 99% of all the players ever play, they need a system. That system was the system Sean Payton created for Drew Brees. That's the reason why we were able to see the magic and see it last night with him going over the yardage mark, which was, I mean, it's unbelievable. I interviewed Drew Brees a couple weeks ago, and Drew Brees told me his first preseason game with the Chargers, he was in Miami. And he said, coming out the tunnel, he looked up there and he saw Dan Marino's and he saw his numbers up there in the Ring of Honor. And he's just, wow, he couldn't believe that Dan had accomplished that. He couldn't even think to have himself in the same breath. So Drew Brees is truly amazed at what he's been able to accomplish in the NFL.
First in completions, first in completion percentage, first in yards, fourth in touchdowns. But he is going to finish first or second in touchdowns. He and Brady might volley that back and forth the next few years once they both finally pass Peyton Manning, probably midway through next season or late into next season, assuming they both play. But when you bring up Sean Payton, take the all-time quarterbacks list. Man, Montana had Walsh. Brady has Belichick. Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, and Tony Dungy. I know we don't look at Dungy as an offensive
coach. Yeah,
Tom Moore, Bill Polian picking the players.
Yes.
Brett Favre had Holmgren. I mean, go down the list. Staubach had Landry. Bradshaw had Knoll. Like, there's a reason that it's hard to find. Oh, think about this all-time great quarterback who had a bunch of different coaches and they stunk. Like, maybe there are some guys whose opportunity was missed. Maybe there are some guys
who
weren't
in the right place. Like, I think about the guy who replaced Drew Brees in San Diego, now Los Angeles, Philip Rivers. Is there a different story to be told for Philip Rivers' career with all the talent he has if he has a Sean Payton? I don't know. And is there a different story to be told if Drew Brees ends up going? Because the Brees-Culpepper thing's noteworthy because up to that point, Dante Culpepper's the more accomplished player.
Yes.
Up to that point, Dante Culpepper seemed to be the more the safer bet. And now we look back on it and we think that's crazy. But that's where we were. And so it is as unlikely as Brady's story was as the 199th pick. Mm-hmm. Breeze's story as a 6-foot guy who was on a second team who'd been injured.
Second round pick to have all these records,
it's equally as
I mean, we thought Dante Culpepper, because who was Dante at that time? We thought he was the next era of quarterback.
Yes.
Because he was a pocket quarterback who could run a 4.5 and was 245. So he was that thing that we hadn't seen. We thought he was actually the future of quarterbacking, and we didn't know the guy that Nick Saban didn't want is actually the future of quarterbacking and playing it from the pocket.
Not to be lost in all this, the Saints are now 4-1, so we'll talk much more about the direction they're going in. But coming up on the other side, is Jason Garrett already on the hot seat? That's next on First Things First. Stay with us. All right, let's move on to the big topic rolling around yesterday. Jason Garrett, the Cowboys head coach, under much scrutiny after his decision to punt on 4th-and-1 in overtime Sunday night. You know, despite having one of the best running backs in the game. Cowboys ended up losing to Houston after the game. Jerry Jones said about the decision to punt, it was time to take risks. Garrett says he explained his thought process to Jerry Jones and said he still believes he has the support of the Cowboys owner. All right, CC, should Jason Garrett be coaching for his job at this point on the heels of both what happened Sunday and just the way that this Cowboys offense has been all season?
Every coach in the NFL, if he had the same record as Jason Garrett had, they'd be coaching for the job. And that even being Bill Belichick. If Bill Belichick had, in the last 8 years, 9 years, if his record was exactly like Jason Garrett was, like, because he doesn't have a hallmark. You know, he doesn't have anything to say. You know something? I build a great defense. You know something? I cultivate young talent. You know something? I can put a top five offense out there on the field every year. That's the reason why I'm here. He can't do those things.
No. Nope.
So, yeah, he should be in this very, very competitive league that is about parity. And, man, I'm going to tell you, every year there are 8 to 10 teams that really have a shot to win the Super Bowl. Like, they actually do. This is not the other sports. Like, you don't have the salary cap. You don't have one team making all the money and other teams. No. That's the reason why you have competitive balance in the NFL. And when you have that, you should have higher expectations on your coaches. This is one of the better franchises. It's supported financially. He's able to go out and get players to be able to develop these players. And I think the Dallas front office, I give them credit. They've done well with the draft. They've drafted some quality players. And their defense is outstanding. But when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, what else do they have besides that? The guys they draft on the offensive line.
And an outstanding defense. They got Zeke.
Outstanding defense. And they got Zeke, which they drafted. So I'm giving them credit for that, you know. But what is the head coach responsible for besides trying to keep a culture or trying to keep the owner satisfied? Like, what is it, that relationship there? And I think that Jerry is comfortable having Jason Garrett there and the way he wants the Dallas Cowboys to be run. But Jerry said it's about winning. If it is about winning, then his job should be in question.
Well, and what does a head coach do? Either has excellent schematics or helps nurture talent. Like, who's on the Dallas Cowboys that were like, wow, they're way better than we ever thought they would have been? They've drafted really well.
It was supposed to be Dak Prescott.
And by the way, for
after
Dak,
after the first
though,
season it was. It,
well, this is the thing. That was by accident.
Yes.
Because Tony Romo got hurt.
And it's not like Dak all of a sudden was getting better, better, better. It was just immediately he was better than anyone expected. What I'm talking about is a player who starts here and after 2 or 3 years in the system, in the coaching, in the culture, gets to here.
Yes.
A player who reaches or even exceeds what you thought his potential was. But there was an interesting question posed on a podcast I was listening to yesterday, one of the Ringer podcasts. If Jason Garrett got fired, who's hiring him? What's his next job? Is he the head coach at Princeton, his alma mater? There's no NFL teams making him a head coach.
I'm not certain what
NFL team is lining up to make him an offensive coordinator.
Because he hadn't had the experience of calling plays. If you're going to be a coordinator, calling plays is a key skill.
So you've got one of the marquee jobs in all of sports, a job that if it were open, you don't think David Shaw at Stanford no matter how much he likes Stanford, would think long and hard about becoming the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys? You don't think there would be coaches across the league thinking, whoever the hot young coordinator is, whoever the potential next Sean McVay is, man, that's where I want to go. And he has it. The guy who has it would not be a sought commodity for anyone if he were on the market.
Let me ask an unpopular question, but just to play devil's advocate. Is there anything to be said for taking a conservative approach to head coaching, knowing that in your division nobody's running away with this, that if you can just steady the ship and keep everybody healthy and maybe play to tie and not always play to win? I know it's not the sexy approach, but is there anything to that given the way this division is going?
Yeah, if you're talking about this year, but if you're talking about Dallas Cowboys and with Jerry Jones, man, Jerry Jones is trying to win a championship. Like, he could stay. Yeah, absolutely. That would be, to me, be the easy thing to do. Washington last night, 2-1 coming into. We knew they'd come back to the pack. But are you trying?
The whole pack is down.
Yeah,
there.
But are you trying to win a championship? Do you think you're as good as the Rams? Like, do you think you're as good as the best teams in the NFL? Because your division is one thing. But it's where is the franchise going and what is the potential? Are you just going to allow this talent that you have on that offensive line and at running back, you're just going to allow another year to waste away? I told Nick, out of their first 3 years, the first three teams they've been on since Dak and Zeke have been there, year number one in 2016 was the best opportunity for them to win a Super Bowl. Because also, they had a great situation at quarterback because Tony Romo was still there. See, my thing is, they should have been looking at Jason Garrett's job. Even when they had Tony Romo, when they had a better team, they had a better chance to win the Super Bowl. And people would question, should they have made the move then? And I would be in that group. Like, this is long, long overdue with the lack of playoff success that the Cowboys have had.
He's been the Cowboys head coach for 9 years. If you remove that 1 year, Dak, Zeke, magical year, he's 56-53. That's as close to being right at 500 as you can be. Now, even with that 1 year, he's at 55% wins. There's 11 coaches in the sport that have coached at least 75 games. 9 have been to a Super Bowl. One is Marvin Lewis, who was coaching the worst franchise in the sport for a while. He's taken him to 7 playoff appearances, but even Marvin Lewis's time, people have thought, is up. And the other is Jason Garrett, who's been in the playoffs twice and won 1 playoff game. That you don't get this type of job security without at least reaching, if not winning, a Super Bowl. Nobody else has it. That Marvin Lewis has it, but at least they've been more successful over the last 15 years than the Cowboys.
Yes.
They've been in the playoffs 7 times.
Yeah.
From where the Bengals were, from wearing the bags on their heads. Like, I don't know what the justification is other than it's easy to keep him. And I said last week, sometimes when you're coaching with job security, you are not making the best choices for your team. That decision to punt on 4th-and-1 is a coach with job security. It's a coach that says, I'm not going to do anything outside the lines at all, because I think as long as I don't make a major gaffe, I get to keep my job, even if that's not what's best for the team.
And yes, it is easier to keep Jason Garrett, but it wasn't easy to make that decision about Dez Bryant, and Jerry Jones made that decision. Not that the two were exactly the same, but he did make one somewhat tough decision in letting Dez Bryant go. But we'll talk about this a little bit more as your eyebrows raised so high.
Yeah.
That I
mean, it didn't help
imagine.
The team.
No,
I
it
mean,
did
how
not.
How tough the decisions are when you make tough decisions, but for the detriment of the team.
Right, and this clearly isn't helping the team either. We'll have Bart Scott out here to talk about this in a little bit. But time now for your player resume, sponsored by Indeed, the world's number one job site. Manny Machado was the star for the Dodgers last night. His 3-run home run helped LA finish a 3-1 series win over the Braves in the NLDS. Nick, how impressed were you with the Dodgers in this series?
Man, from Clayton Kershaw's 85-pitch shutout through 8 innings to Machado, who had struggled first 3 games of the series, only 1 hit. Yesterday, an RBI double, and then the 3-run shot that broke the game open. This is the guy they traded for. This could be the key to them reaching another World
Series. And he had a lot of pressure coming into this game. Heard the interview before the game. He was great, saying, yes, I've struggled, but I'm going to keep swinging the same way. They're going to miss a couple pitches, and when they miss, I'm going to take advantage of it. That's what he was able to do yesterday.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, Bill O'Brien is at odds with Deshaun Watson over his playing style. We'll break that down next on First Things First. On Saturday, Minnesota's gunning for a big upset when they take on number 3 Ohio State. It all starts at noon Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app, Nick.
I mean, check out Dwayne Haskins. You haven't been watching him this year. He's, I think, probably 4th or 5th right now in the Heisman. CeCe been talking about him for a year and a half since JT Barrett was the quarterback. Watch Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins.
And watch LeBron James. Time for us to go viral. LeBron getting used to his new Laker teammates this preseason. However, there is one teammate who's been missing, Lonzo Ball. Lonzo expected to make his preseason debut tomorrow against the Warriors. LeBron was so excited, he hopped on the gram and posted a photo of the two with the caption, "It's about that time, young king. Let's get it. You were born for this moment." To which Nick had some fantastic rebuttals in the morning meeting today.
I'll keep those off the air. See, this is what you were talking about, though, as far as finding ways to bond with the generation gap amongst the young teammates, bringing them in, showing them. Because, I mean, he's about 12 years older than Lonzo, saying, hey,
you ready
for this right now?
Yeah, he is born for this moment. Even if LeBron wasn't there, he's talking about the NBA moment, chasing after championships, trying to build your legacy. Yes, that's what Lonzo, he was born for. Yes, absolutely. Good job. The King, this is going to be Wednesday night, Warriors. Preseason basketball, yes, I'm excited about it.
And I like that the Lakers have Rondo so Lonzo doesn't have to start the season. They don't have to rush him back from
the injury. You're trying to be Patty Mahomes or something.
What do you mean? My voice? Come on, man.
I'm doing my best.
Your voice sounds like you're like 5'9".
I'm doing my best.
Stories to start your morning now. The Red Sox destroyed the Yankees 16-1 last night, taking a 2-1 lead in the ALDS. Brock Holt became the first player in postseason history to hit for the cycle. Wow. Lou Severino, though, struggled. He gave up 6 runs in 3 innings. This was a rout. What was your takeaway in Game 3?
Man,
Nick?
My takeaway is I love being in New York City right now because only in New York City could a team lose 16-1. And the back page of the New York Post is blaming the manager, Aaron Boone. Like, yo, man, what moves did you want him to make last night that he wasn't making? I understand they thought, man, maybe if you could leave Lance Lynn in and not blow through your bullpen because now you got back-to-back must-win games. But I've been telling you all year, man, there's two teams in baseball better than everybody. The Astros and the Red Sox. Looks like that's what we're going to get in the ALCS this year.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky to be down only 2-1. I talked to my guys, Joe. Joe stayed up late watching it and everything. Me and Goose, we turned the channel. We got other sports we got to keep up with, but we're with the Yankees, though. All we got to do is get one more win to take it to 5. That's all you got to do. Just try to win one game.
So that you can win another game.
Yes, this is a great team. And nothing's wrong with the skipper, man. Leave the skipper alone.
I know you got faith in your guy, CeCe Sabathia, tonight. I know that.
Yeah, CeCe, I need 4 tickets, bro. Leave them for me. You know how we do. You know how we do, VIP. I come through the back gate. What is it, 2 or 5?
CeCe. Big night for Drew Brees. He set the all-time passing yards record with a 62-yard touchdown bomb to Tre'Quan Smith. Saints beat Washington 43-19. See, how impressive is this accomplishment?
It's one of the most impressive that I've seen. If you think all the quarterbacks in the last 20 years, oh, man, who's going to be the yardage king? Oh, it's going to be Peyton. Oh, it's going to be
Favre.
Brady. It's going to be Favre. They'll never catch Favre. No, Drew Brees, he got it. Nothing greater in the passing game than seeing this guy at under 6 foot being the best of the best. Very impressive.
And it reminded me of Jeter's 3,000th hit being a home run. Because it happened on a touchdown, you really could stop the game fully. Your guy David Baker was there with the white gloves to get the football. The refs flagged him
that
for excessive celebration, which was an
insane odd
call since it was a
when
planned.
They know the NFL is going to stop the game.
I mean, one of the refs, I think, had a laminated sheet of paper he was handing to him while throwing the flag.
I'm glad it was a touchdown because Drew Brees didn't want to stop the game.
Right.
He doesn't want anything to get in the way of what they're doing, but a great moment having his family down the field, talking to his boys, letting his boys know, listen, you set a goal in life, if you work hard, you can go get it. So that was a great message, I thought, to all young people.
All right,
and
moving
y'all
on.
Old people, too, because y'all could be better than what y'all.
Oh, okay.
That's fresh.
Speaking of people who could be better.
Oh.
Here we go. Giants tackle Ereck Flowers. The saga continues, but it's almost over. To add to the other bad news he received a few weeks ago of getting benched, according to reports, he will either be traded or released today. This can't come as a big surprise to you, Nick, does it?
The surprise is what took so long. Because not only has he been a bad player, he reportedly hasn't been a good locker room guy. Was upset when he got moved from left tackle to right tackle. Has been a bit of a malcontent. Some guys just don't live up to their draft status.
Yes.
If he were anything other than a first-round pick, he would have been cut 2 years ago. They have given him this much rope because of his draft pedigree. But no, time to go, man.
From the beginning, when they called his name, there was question, could he be a tackle in the NFL? let alone a right tackle. They tried him at left tackle, the hardest spot. He should be, he needs a change of scenery. Players like him who come into with a lot of accolades and everything, high draft picks, they fail at one place. Someone else give him an opportunity where he won't have those high expectations. I still believe he's a starting offensive lineman. Needs to regain his confidence. A new setting would help.
All right, and finally, according to reports, there's a good chance the Panthers will have tight end Greg Olsen back for week 6 against Washington. Carolina currently 3-1 coming off their bye. See, are the Panthers flying under the radar in the NFC?
Absolutely. It seems like they've done this a couple times to teams. Cam's MVP season. Ron Rivera, his team, he puts a winner on the field all the time, but he doesn't necessarily get the type of credit that we give other coaches out there. So, yes, this Carolina team, yes, they are flying under the radar. If you look at the only loss that they have, tough battle there in Atlanta.
Yep.
You know, divisional game that they know, that game went back and forth, back and forth. Either team could have won this game. So, yes, they are one of the teams that's flying under the radar, but we shouldn't be surprised because this is what they have done in Carolina. Since Cam's been there, since Ron Rivera has been there, they have put a good product on the field. Yes, Carolina, I wouldn't want to play them. Why? Because they have one of the most dangerous quarterbacks, and they always put a very, very physical defense on the field. So when you start looking at the NFC, if we were talking about the tournament, Carolina's not a team you want to be able to play if you have to win two or three games to get to the Super Bowl.
And they will play. They play New Orleans in week 15 and week 17. So New Orleans, Carolina, like they're the two teams that looks like that division is going to come down to, they won't even play each other until mid-December, and they'll play each other two times in 3 weeks. And you mentioned their one loss. How about that win over Cincinnati that now looks better than at the time? I mean, Cincinnati, that's their one loss of the season. But I want to give number one some credit in Cam Newton, because I understand in 2018, everyone's got these gaudy passer numbers. There are six quarterbacks right now with a passer rating north of 110, which is just make-believe. And Cam's passer numbers, once again, look somewhat pedestrian. But if you watch this team play, everything runs through him. From the block he threw that we showed yesterday on the end around to the threat he has with his legs on every single play, to third and short feeling like it's almost a given because you have him, and the fact that he can take that type of punishment. You remember the game, I think it was week one, it might have been week two against Atlanta, when Cam got the guy hit Cam so illegally and so late in the head, he was ejected for it. Cam didn't miss a snap.
Yeah, Casey.
Right. Mm-hmm. He didn't miss a snap. And that plus Christian McCaffrey, now they might be getting Greg Olsen back. I thought the offensive line injuries were going to ruin them. They have been able to overcome those thus far. And the defense is good as it always is. Julius Peppers still out there looking like a young guy somehow. Like, no, this is a dangerous team.
Yeah, to mention the quarterbacks that are at that pace, look at those guys and look at how many of them have a new offensive coordinator, because that's what Cam has. Not only has he had new receivers and stuff he's got to get used to, McCaffrey, what's his role going to be ultimately? But Cam's getting used to North Turner being there. But people in the organization think that Cam is making all the strides as a pocket passer and as a leader to be the type of quarterback that they always knew he could be there in Carolina.
All right, let's move now on to Deshaun Watson. The Texans quarterback has led Houston to two straight wins, keeping them alive in a competitive AFC South. But he did take 10 hits against Dallas Sunday night, including a massive shot on fourth down right near the goal line. Watson and his head coach have differing opinions on his approach to the game. Take a listen.
When we're down at the goal line and, you know, I'm trying to get in the end zone, that's my mentality. So regardless of what I got to do, you know, if it's three dudes like it was tonight multiple times, I'm going to try to, you know, fight my ass off to get in the end zone. And, you know, that's my mentality. And whatever it takes, you know, I'm built to take those hits. And, you know, I'm just going to, you know, give all my will and my guts and trying to get the ball in the end zone.
Obviously, those are plays that we want to cut down on, and we're going to work hard to do that moving forward. Because, you know, we know that that's not a sustainable way to play, to be hit that much in a game. We understand that. So we're going to work hard to try to improve that.
All right, see, first describe, what is Watson's playing style? Is it any different than it was last year when he was just playing lights out?
Well, style's not any different. He's a gamer. And if the play breaks down, he's a good athlete. He's going to try to make something happen. I understand what Deshaun's saying as far as in the red zone, he was going to be far more aggressive. But You can't just take the red zone and say, okay, on this part of the field, you know something? I'm going to take a little more of myself to be able to take on the defenders. No, you shouldn't do that. If you're going to take on defenders, which you're not going to make a living as a quarterback, you need to know they ain't on numbers. When a guy's 54, leave him alone. The guy's a hired killer. All right? That's Jalen Smith. He's running. He's fast as fast as you are, faster than you. Watch how he accelerates and almost runs through him. That was a headshot right there. That was a kill shot. So, no, you can't be. You have to know the personnel. Now, there's a couple other times. There was some 20s and 30s numbers. Heath out there, 38. Look him up. Because those are the kind of car crashes that you can survive from. A cornerback. Like, you'll see them corners out there. Every once in a while, you can challenge them because Bill O'Brien, I understand what he's saying, but Bill O'Brien's not on the field. And when you're on the field, people say things to you. At certain points, you just want to take it on yourself. Now, as a quarterback, you can't do that as often as the other offensive players. And it's been proven, even Cam Newton, no quarterback is built to take those types of hits. So I understand Deshaun saying what he's saying, but he's also only had a handful of starts, Jenna. So he'll learn more about the league as he goes through the league. But that's not, if you're a Titans fan, that's not what you want to see from your quarterback.
Texans, excuse me. Listen, I understand the concern. It is a little audacious for anyone, most notably the most powerful person in the Texans organization from a front office perspective. Bill O'Brien won a power struggle with the GM this past year. He is in charge of everything. He's the one that's picking the groceries. And one of the big reasons Deshaun Watson's hit that much, one of the big reasons he's running that much, is because that pocket is collapsing. I understand on those plays it's different. He's either designed runs or he's trying to make a play. But if you watch this team, that pocket is collapsing nearly every play because they have the worst pair of tackles in the league. The Texans this offseason tried to go get Nate Solder. They didn't get him, and their backup plan was Shontrell Henderson. Man, see, I was at FS1 when they were going after you for this show. I can't imagine. You had another job opportunity. If you turned us down, they're like, all right, we didn't get Chris Carter. Fred X it is. Like, you can't go from there to there. You can't go from Nate Solder to Shontrell Henderson when you know you don't have a first-round pick
second-round
pick. Listen, Shontrell Henderson, by the way.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. And he's not even playing anymore.
He's been a bust.
Their tackles.
First-round pick from University of Miami. He was the number one recruit in all of high school, came from Minnesota, went to Miami after first committing to USC, had a lot of trouble in college,
right.
Still got drafted high, 6'7", 340 pounds. Nick, say what you want about
the
man.
He's now out, and so Kendall Lamb, an undrafted free agent, is one of their tackles, and Julian Davenport, a fourth-round pick from Bucknell, with which respect, I didn't know they had a football program, is their other tackle.
But if we know their personnel, Nick, the quarterback's got to know their personnel.
Yes.
Because if the tackles have broke down, and that's fine, we can blame it on anyone, general manager, organization, that Deshaun Watson's got to be responsible because he could go out of bounds here. That ain't got nothing to do with the tackle.
Well, you can't.
That's not Bill O'Brien.
But that was fourth and goal at the end of the first half. You can't go out of bounds there.
But listen, I don't want him taking shots like that.
Okay.
What if he gets knocked out and he scores? He gets knocked out, he scores a touchdown. How happy are we? We're not happy at all. So sometimes you got to lose those little battles, man, to be able to win the war. All right? So we can't blame it on his bad offensive line because Aaron Rodgers has moments. But you got to be smart. You are the face of the franchise. If we know the personnel, if we know the left and tackle is not good, you have to know that. So it becomes even more important that you stay out of the defender's way.
So listening to this conversation about how much we trust what game plan or what approach Deshaun Watson has to the game, do we trust this Texans team as a whole? I know they've had recent success, but what are the issues that are keeping them from actually propelling them to the next level? And they don't have to win overtime. They don't have to win just by the skin of their teeth.
On offense, all they have going for them is that quarterback and his wide receivers.
Yes.
Nuke is excellent. Will Fuller has been a big play guy.
Yes.
That QT guy that they drafted in mid-round this year.
Yes.
Had an awesome first game. He showed some flashes last week. They have no running game. They have no offensive line. I don't like their secondary. They got Watt and Clowney, who are now playing well together, but they're at a schematic disadvantage every week because of the coaching. And so, like, so much is on his shoulders. That's why he's at practice with these guys, see? And so I understand your point. He's got to play almost older than he is, play more mature, smarter. But I also think he goes into every game saying, if I'm not amazing.
What excuse do we make for Russell Wilson? What excuse do we make for him for the offensive line? Over the last several years, no one spent less money on offensive line than the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson, he does it. All right? He keeps himself out of danger. He's got to run. He's got to use his athleticism. He's got to win games. So we have examples. Listen, this is not the excuse business. It's the get it done business. He's the quarterback. The offensive line's not good. He's not supported by a running game. All right? You got to be a force multiplier. That's what the best of the best do in this business, and staying healthy. All right? Because that's something that he's got to be able to deal with. Got hurt in college, already's been hurt in the NFL, non-contact injury. So if he wants to be able to remove that from his resume, he's got to be able to keep himself healthy and keep himself in the lineup.
I want to make sure I understand your opinion on one thing. You do think he's been a force multiplier, correct? You're just concerned about whether or not his style's sustainable.
I'm concerned health-wise. That we're trying to make excuses. No excuses. We don't make excuses for Russell, all right? He's got the same type of environment.
Right, but I don't even think there's anything to make an excuse for right now, because the commentary is about something that hasn't happened yet. It's about preventing an injury, not why is he not playing better, because he's played well.
The question was, what about the Texans? What
got it?
If they reach their potential, how good are they?
Right.
They're the bottom of the playoff. They're not as good as Jacksonville. They're not as good as the Titans. They don't have as good as personnel. So for me, they're still building. They have a couple marquee pieces, couple little shiny little toys, but their foundation, offensive line, that's why you can't have a running game. No offensive line leads to no running game.
All right, we got a break there. Coming up, will a season-ending injury snap the Eagles out of their Super Bowl hangover? That's next on First Things First.
I forgot.
Welcome back to First Things First.
Not my shiny
former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott talking about his ankles and other things on the program.
Good to see you, sir.
What's up?
It's great to have you here.
I wish I was in that last segment, man. I tell you what,
we should make a show
to see Deshaun Watson come around.
Breaks.
I would push that easy button on Deshaun Watson if I was playing. You can't, hey, I got two words for him. Pat White. Pat White went night-night, woke up and picked up a bat. Say, I'm done.
That's true. He went and played baseball.
He got hit so hard, he's like, you know what? He put a roll, he put a baseball cap on. Like, I'm out of here. Y'all crazy.
Let's move on and not talk about Pat White. A case of bad to worse for the Philadelphia Eagles. First, they lost to the Vikings on Sunday. That's pretty bad. Now, according to Adam Schefter, Jay Ajayi is out for the season with a torn ACL. That's worse. Here's why. The defending champs are 2-3 on the year with Thursday night football coming up. Their opponents, division rival New York Giants. Head coach Doug Peterson says it is time to get rid of the Super Bowl hangover.
That's the thing you guard against. You guard against so-called burnout or the energy levels down. You also have to guard against the what success looks like to everybody, you know, and how that can pull on people, you know, and distract people, players, coaches, I'm included. It's a challenge, but our guys have really embraced it, quite honestly. I've seen them. You know, the way they work in practice and during the week and how they prepare themselves. And right now it's just not carrying over enough into the games.
You know, guys, Jason Whitlock actually made a very good point yesterday about the Eagles. He said there are some teams who actually do better when they're handling adversity, when they're in a tough situation. They're better as a team than they are handling success. They just don't handle success as well. This is a team coming off an incredibly successful year. And they spent all offseason talking about it, and they came into this year seemingly without a ton of energy, unprepared. Players that were playing great last year aren't playing well this year, and now they lose their running back. A lot of interesting faces I'm getting looking my way, so I'm going to start with you, Bart Scott.
Yeah, we're going to try to outsource this question to you, Bart.
What does Whitlock know about winning?
That's
my guy. I know the best with you. But I tell you what, when I'm listening to his interview, and he's talking about, you know, what success looks like to other people. Right. So when you say that, you say including myself, how about you going on a book tour, you know, writing a book in the offseason, you're going to make this off the field money,
right.
You know, all this stuff. You started it. Attitude reflects leadership.
Are you burned out? I mean, because that's what I mean, I know he wrote the book.
Yeah.
I know he was out on the circuit. Is he burned out?
He's really on the circuit.
Is he speaking for the team?
I think he's speaking about himself and the team. And what's happening is, you know, now that it's on film, teams have adjusted. People have learned what they do, what they can't do, what they struggle with. Alshon Jeffrey's not being hurt. I feel like he's panicking. He's trying to seem calm on the surface, but his feet's moving like a duck on water. And he needs to control his team, get them together, rally around them. I think it's a huge loss losing Jay Ajayi. You know, I don't know if they can make the move for Shady McCoy, you know, because I feel like the Bills are rebuilding, you know, so somebody should be in the market for Shady McCoy. I believe that either the Eagles or the Packers should be in the move in the market for Shady McCoy, because I feel like he's an aging quarterback. He has a decent cap number, but he's a guy that they understand isn't going to be part of that long-term future in Buffalo.
Well, listen, whether it's Shady McCoy or the guy that you've been talking about, the Eagles targeting, Le'Veon Bell. They have an extra second-round pick this year because of they were the other side of the Lamar Jackson trade, right? That's how Baltimore traded back up into the first round. What they gave away was a second-round pick this year and some other compensation. They have the ability, I would think, to add a player better than Jay Ajayi. And even if it's just a rental, as it would be for Le'Veon Bell, that could be the juice this team needs. On Friday, they restructured Fletcher Cox's deal, so they, not because of this, but now there's actually, they have the cap space to add a guy like that. Right. They saved $6 million against the cap this year. They need an injection of something. I was listening to Doug Peterson there, and it just struck me as he was kind of just making things up.
Oh,
like he was guessing. He was guessing, like, what are we guarding against? And that's, I don't say that disrespectfully, but nobody knows what it's like to win a Super Bowl unless you've won one before. He hadn't won one before. He was only a second-year head coach. All of this came quickly to him and probably somewhat unexpectedly.
The jury was still out on Doug as a coach last year at this time. Now he's an expert. Oh, man, it's the Super Bowl hangover. Oh, you know, fatigue. Oh, but I like the way the guys are working. Like, that to me is a coach who's confused. If I'm a player, and we watch press conference, and we do read the press clippings. They actually put all the press clippings together and pass them out in the locker room so you don't have to pick up every newspaper. So you see everything that's written about you locally and from a national standpoint. So Doug is in that foreign territory. He don't know what to do. So in the press conference, he's just making stuff up. Mangini admitted. Belichick will never admit it. But the only year that they struggled in New England after winning the Super Bowl was after that first one. So they had to figure out what it's like to be a champion. Where this injury hurts them the most is it hurts because the decision that they decided to go off of LeGarrette Blount. So they decided we're not going to bring a hammer into the season. There's a reason why the Miami Dolphins had Jay Ajayi available last year. The reason why? He had a bad knee. All right? This same knee that he's finally getting operated on. So there was a reason why he was available. The Eagles, what they decided to do this offseason was not bring a thunder into the offense, allow him to go in free agency. So now they have a problem. I believe Howie Roseman makes a move because they want to be defending champs and be able to get into the tournament. They're a dangerous team if they get in because they've had success. But to start the segment, there is no team out there that does better struggling than doing well. So no one can account for that being like, oh, yeah, you know, we're a team that we do better when we're struggling. Well, there's this reason why you're inconsistent.
Jay did say something shortly after the game talking about the play calling and calling out Doug Peterson because of the play calling, that maybe if they had sort of
wanted
not
to run the ball more,
a little bit more than what they had been doing right now, just changing the plays up and maybe that balancing out the offense would be maybe the difference that they needed here. Do you see that as any issue with this team?
Well, you always want to set the table by running the ball because he was averaging 5.8 yards a carry. But, you know, when you're behind and you're searching defensively, see, defensively they were elite last year, so they were able to get off the field, provide extra possessions for their offense, short fields, turnovers. I thought bringing in Haloti Ngata, bringing in Michael Bennett, guys who didn't win the Super Bowl last year, veteran leaders who had won a Super Bowl before, would really keep that team hungry. But they have to figure out, you know, who's going to be the spark this year. Having Darren Sproles back is a matchup nightmare. But they don't have a hammer anymore, and you have to have that, you know, because as the weather gets better, teams are going to stack the box. The football's not going to fly as easy, and you're not going to be able to kick the ball as far. So I think they have to go out, they have to make a move, and they have to make it fast because somebody else is going to get into that running for either Shady or Le'Veon Bell.
But what they have,
next couple of weeks.
Sorry to interrupt you. What they have going for them is their division.
Yep.
They're 2-3, and guess what?
Short
Nobody's got more wins in their division. They do have a short week. They have the Giants coming up this week on Thursday. They don't have to be any better than 6-6 with a month to play, to still be have the ability, hit their stride in December, and to have a home playoff game thanks to having won that division. Now, it's hard to see home field going through Philly
right.
the way it did last year, but if you add a special player at running back, they didn't have a special player at running back last year. They had a nice complement of mm-hmm. players. Shady or Le'Veon Bell, when you have the cap space and the draft capital to go acquire one of those guys, to me, that could be something that changes the trajectory. Because right now, the Eagles are a team without an identity. Last year, best third down team in the league by over a number of years. This year, below average on third down, below average running the football, below average against the pass. Like, things they were great at last year, they're not even average at this year. They need something to shake it up in Philadelphia.
You mentioned it. Short turnaround this week as they face the Giants on Thursday Night Football. Bart, stick around. Coming up, is Jason Garrett already on the hot seat? Next on First Things First. Here at Bart Scott, there is discourse in Dallas these days. That'll happen when your head coach decides to punt on 4th-and-1 in overtime against the Texans Sunday night. And you know how that played out. Dallas ended up losing the game. Afterwards, owner Jerry Jones said about the decision to punt, it was time to take risks. Jason Garrett says he explained his thought process to Jerry Jones and still believes he has the support of the Cowboys owner. Bart, should Jason Garrett be coaching for his job at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. They've been a model of mediocrity. I think it's time to really bring Dak Prescott back and say, listen, he's not an elite quarterback. He's not a guy that can take the team and put him on his shoulders. We have to go back, look at what they do with Nick Foles, and say, okay, we're going to do RPOs. We're going to try and figure out a way to utilize his legs, put him on the move. Let's not let him drop back. He doesn't have receivers that can open, that can get open by themselves, so you have to get him open with the RPOs, get in the safeties, get him looking in the backfield, the fear of Dak Prescott, and they may have to consider going out there to make a move. The good thing is they're in the division where 2 wins is leading the division. Washington took it on the chin yesterday. They still have an opportunity if they can figure this out. Travis Frederick going on IR is disappointing because I think Collins is struggling. I think that they don't have their leader at center, a guy that makes all the line calls, that makes everything right, that's able to decipher the blitzes and the packages that are coming. And I think they're going to have to say, you know what, we're going to use Dak. That defense is elite. We're going to have to play ugly football and win ugly.
So at you got to look at it from his whole career, not just this season. This season, the Cowboys being 2-3, yeah, maybe they could be 3-2, but I don't put a ton at Jason Garrett's feet. I don't say, like, man, they are way underachieving. This is a team we knew would struggle to throw the football. We had seen Dak regress last year, and I don't think you can say it's Jason Garrett's job to get Dak back to year one, Dak, if that guy doesn't exist anymore. But when you look at it as a scope longer than this year, it is exactly what you said, mediocre. They've only had 1 year where they really bottomed out. They've had 2 years where they've been really good. Mm-hmm. And every other year, they're right in that 8-8, 9-7 range. And by the way, what do we think they're going to be this year? 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. Now, maybe because it's the NFC East, that's enough to trick yourself into believing, hey,
right.
we're only a game back in the division, half game back in the division. We could do it. But are you better at that position? Can you get better at that position? Just like any player on the field. Can we get mm-hmm. better at this spot? Or is it just the comfortable thing to stay where we're at? And right now, Jason Garrett's the comfortable thing. He's the safe thing. He's the guy that you know isn't going to, and this might be the most important thing, Jerry knows he's not going to challenge him.
He's a puppet.
That's stronger than I would say, but sure. What he's not going to do is have, when Jerry Jones says we should have gone for it on fourth down, is have a press conference where he says, listen, I respect Jerry's opinion, but last I checked, he's the owner, not the coordinator. We make those decisions. Instead, I talk to Jerry. I explain myself to Jerry. So Jerry Jones fired Jimmy Johnson. Not because Jimmy Johnson didn't know what he was doing, because Jimmy Johnson was getting too much credit. He knows Jason Garrett's never going to get any of the credit. But are you missing out on a window right here with Zeke and Dak, that offensive line and that defense?
Yeah, we have to realize, too, that Jerry Jones has decided long, long time ago from a management style what type of coach he was going to go with. When he turned everything over to Jimmy Johnson had scouting, had everything. He was running everything, the personnel department. He got away from that. Then he started losing. Then he hired Bill Parcells. And Bill Parcells was running everything. And him and Bill didn't work out, so now he's gone back to this different management style. So we can't analyze the Dallas Cowboys without analyzing what does Jerry want. And Jerry wants a coach like Jason Garrett. Now, I'm going to tell you, I like Jason Garrett. He's a good guy. He's a good football guy. He's lived a very charmed football life, going to Princeton, being a backup for the Dallas Cowboys. Like, where's his struggle in life really been? Ultimately named the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. So he's got a great job. But if the Dallas Cowboys want to do what the New York football Giants decided, that after two Super Bowls, Tom Coughlin is not good enough.
Right.
What? Two Super Bowls? All the discipline Tom Coughlin? When he started losing that discipline, what did they do? Chip Kelly, one of the most innovative minds, the Philadelphia, they bring him in. You know what they realize immediately after turning everything over to him? That's not going to work. So they brought up a young offensive coordinator. Peters got them their only Super Bowl. So, Jerry, you can keep managing this way if you want to, but it wasn't good enough for the Giants. And the Giants been winning the Super Bowls for a long time. Wasn't good enough for Philadelphia. They hadn't won. They decided to change their coach, and they got a Super Bowl immediately. So he's got to change his management style if he wants to be able to change who the head coach
is. He's had years to do this if this is something that was really, really bothering him. If he was very unhappy with the way his team is being coached, don't you think he would have made a change? There's something to the effect of having a guy that will listen to you, that will do what you want, that is right. more comfortable to you than taking a chance, bringing a young, hot guy in who's going to make changes and buck the system and give you a chance of winning.
I mean, when you look at the Dallas Cowboys organization, Jerry Jones is the face of that organization. He's the only owner I know that has a radio show every week because yep. he makes it more about him. And sometimes you got to take a step back. Jason Garrett's been there over 10 years. I remember we offered him the job in Baltimore, and he turned it down, and we brought in John Harbaugh. And sometimes your message gets old, and I think his message gets stale, and I don't know if the
especially
players
NFL
really
locker room.
Yeah, I don't know if the players still even respect
him. Which is
him.
What we heard about Pete Carroll, that it was starting, the message was starting to get old at the end. But
so either you change the players or you change the coach. And, you know, they've changed a lot of players. They lost a lot of leaders in that locker room, and I think this new breed of athlete is like, this guy, what has he proved? What have you done? What have you did to earn this respect?
And it's almost impossible in this league to coach this long without something to hang your hat on success-wise. What's their best year? The Dez Caudet year?
Yeah.
The 13-3 year where they didn't win a playoff game? Those were the only two playoff appearances. I watched Andy Reid make four NFC Championship games and a Super Bowl. And guess what Philly said? Ah, it's run its course. Mm-hmm. Get to stepping. Like, in the NFL, teams typically go the other way. They might have they don't give you enough time to actually get your system in place. Sometimes they're like, man, I watched the Titans coach last year, Malarkey, get this team to the playoffs, win a playoff game. And they said, not good enough. Like, you don't get this type of time without any high-level success. Jason Garrett's gotten it. Now, this year, they came in with real expectations. They thought culturally they were going to be better without Dez Bryant. And right now, they're staring at what they've been almost every year, middle of the pack. Like, and if this job were open, it becomes, like, what are the better jobs in the NFL? Steelers' job? That job's been open, what, 3 times in 40 years? Mm-hmm. The Patriots' job now appears to be one of the best jobs in football, but that's not coming open anytime soon. What are the best? This is one of the 5 or 6 best jobs in football.
But how many people can deal with the owner? Because you know it comes with a certain set of rules. And, you know, he's a guy that meddles. You know, we talk about mm-hmm. Mark Cuban. He's a guy that meddles. He's the one who has opinions. He's making you have to ask questions or answer questions at press conferences about what the owner said. And that's a distraction. So not a lot of established coaches are going to want to come in. You know, you think about the natural fit when Drew Brees leaves New Orleans, that Sean Payton would be a guy who would be perfect to go back home where he started.
Ooh.
But would he want to put up? He's going to have to come in with his list of demands saying, listen, Jerry, this is how it's going to be. Can Jerry step aside and say, okay, here is your show. I'm going to let you go to work. He has shown he hasn't done that because he wants just as much as the credit. You see, they're having to pull him back, you know, from the draft and from meddling. So he's got to step and say, I hired you to do a job. Go do your job.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.